covering the world of soccer live.
It's Puyol!
With Jason Longshore.
And it's the man from the back!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Welcome back. It's a special edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9, The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. Thank you for hanging out with me as we try to make sense of the U.S. men's national team losing 2-1 here at Mercedes-Benz Stadium to Panama this evening. Not literally here at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I have moved across the street to Reverb by Hard Rock. The party is dwindling a little bit, and the folks who are having the best time at the moment are wearing Panama jerseys, and they should be ecstatic with this win. They were huge underdogs coming in. They did what they had to do in this match. And yes, some of it was, what do we say, the dark arts. They got under U.S. player skin. They get Tim Weah to take a swing at someone. It's a red card. The U.S. has to play over 70 minutes, a man down. That's very difficult at this level, no matter who the opposition is. Panama conceded first. They responded very quickly to make it 1-1. They controlled the game, as you would expect, with the man advantage. And what they started to do was pin the U.S. into their own half. The U.S. couldn't get out of their defensive third, and ultimately Panama found the winner in the 83rd minute from Jose Fajardo, and they get the 2-1 win. They're in control of getting out of the group alongside Uruguay right now. The U.S. is going to have to beat the top team in the group, one of the top teams in the world, led by Marcelo Bielsa, Uruguay. They're going to have to take care of that on Monday in the biggest game for U.S. soccer in a long, long time. When we talk about most important games in the history of the men's national team program, you're not going to find one that was more important than 1989, where the U.S. went to Trinidad and Tobago and won. They were massive underdogs. There was already a national holiday scheduled for the next day when Trinidad and Tobago was going to celebrate getting to their first ever World Cup. The U.S. went down there and won. They had to win to get to the World Cup, their first in 40 years. They did that. They handled that. That changed everything for U.S. soccer. I don't think anything's going to top that. This game on Monday is about as close going into it as you could possibly have. Obviously, World Cup knockout round games are a big deal. They don't necessarily change the future of the program. That's what's on the line on Monday. This feels like, and don't tell me 2017 in Trinidad and Tobago where the U.S. lost and Trinidad and Tobago got their revenge a few decades later and knocked the U.S. out of the World Cup. Don't tell me going in what the feeling was for that and it's like this on Monday, because it's not. It wasn't. I lived it. It hurt to see that team not get the win. They should not have been in that situation. It was that moment after the result. Walking in the door, there was not the same level of concern. There is a gigantic level of concern for U.S. soccer walking in the door on Monday where they have to beat a top team, and they still might need some extra help when they beat that top team. They might need Bolivia to keep things reasonable against Panama. If Panama puts a bunch of goals on Bolivia, goal difference is going to come into play, and it's going to get really difficult to watch and manage all of it. Monday night is a pivotal moment for soccer in the United States. Is it going to go away if the result goes against the U.S.? No. Are you going to see, you know, the game not get as much attention? No. Look, controversy creates cash. We all know how this goes, right? People will be talking, but it will more than likely, although it's not a guarantee, it is more than likely going to lead to a change in leadership with the men's national team program 2 years before a World Cup on home soil, where you're not going to have as much time to prepare because you're not going to be able to get competitions like the one that this team is in. They desperately need knockout games in this competition to change that mentality that we just talked about. That is the biggest thing that U.S. soccer has to learn how to deal with. You have to learn how to play in games like this one tonight. Panama has it. They know how to play in games like this, whether they're the underdog, whether they're a favorite, whether it takes saying some really mean things to a player to get them to swing at you. I don't know if that's what happened. I'm wondering. Something happened. Whatever it takes, you do it. That's what this game is all about. We have seen it. We've seen it in other countries. And the U.S. did not rise to that standard tonight against a team that was willing to do whatever it took to get the win. A historic win for Panama tonight as they beat the U.S. men's national team 2-1 at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I told you earlier I would have more audio from the mixed zones after the match. Big thank yous to Madison Cruz and to John Nelson for getting this audio. Anthony Robinson spoke to the media on his way to the buses in the mixed zone. Here is what Jedi had to say at the Benz after the loss.
Very physical, very tough. And that game is like a cup final to them, and they treat it as such. We tried to put as much as we can in with 10 men on the field to try and combat that. But at the end of the day as well, you've got to say hats off to them. They battled. They wanted it just as much as we did. And they had the advantage for 85, 90 minutes of the game. So they managed to take it.
What was the message at halftime? Because, of course, they had a lot of possession in the second half. I know that was down to you guys being 10 men. Was it just to get the bodies behind the ball, kind of be really compact back there and maybe find a chance on the counter?
Yeah, it was, you know, obviously we changed formation. It was trying to stay compact, try and match them up as much as possible. But, you know, deny them too many chances. And, you know, if we get a chance counter-attacking and to win second ball, so we had to try and do that. You know, we would hold it in there for a long time, but eventually they've managed to get a goal. And come to the end of the game, I thought there was going to be a lot more time added on. There wasn't. So, you know, we didn't have enough time when they went down to summer.
Well, I know to say that when you push people back in a corner, you come out swinging and fighting. I'm sure you guys know that you have a big, strong fighting spirit. Looking at the next game as a final now, does that kind of help?
Yeah. I mean, I've already said it. If you want to win this tournament, you've got to be capable of beating good teams. It would have been nice to beat Panama today and know that we're pretty much advancing for the next round. Of course, it would have. It would have took a lot more stress off the next game and we could have played a bit more freely. But now we have to go into it as if it's our cup final, because it very well could be our last game of the tournament if we're not all ready to, you know, put a shift in. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be hard playing against a very good team. All things that we know going into the game. So we're going to have to try and find something in us to get the best out of ourselves, recover now, and try and get the win.
Thanks for your time.
That was Anthony Robinson speaking to the media in the mixed zone after the U.S. 2-1 loss to Panama. I'm Jason Longshore. This is a special edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Live from Reverb by Hard Rock across the street from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. One thing Anthony said there that I do want to get into that we did not yet. We talked a little bit about the referee who was an interesting character. Not gonna lie, I don't think he made the result change. I really don't. Yvonne Barton, the Salvadoran referee, he is a chemistry graduate. He's been on FIFA's list of international referees since 2018. He was in the World Cup in 2022. He managed the England-Senegal round of 16 match, and he was seen on video getting frustrated with Senegal players, yelling at them to shut up. He's given the U.S. men's national team 7 red cards in the last 4 games that he has been in the middle for these. He was part of the U.S.-Mexico Nations League semifinal in June of 2023, sent 4 players off, including Serginho Dest and Weston McKennie. I think he probably got those right in that situation. He also blew early for full time after Mexican fans ignored stadium announcements demanding that they stop the homophobic chanting. He also was refereeing a game with Mexico against Honduras, where the Honduran Federation threatened legal action afterwards, because in that one, he played 12 minutes of added time. The Mexicans won that quarterfinal in penalties. They equalized in the 101st minute. This was later in 2023. The Honduran Football Federation said that they were going to look at legal ramifications for this. The referee signaled 9 minutes of stoppage time in that one. It turned into 12. The equalizing goal was scored after the initial 9. There was also a claim that there was a foul on that goal in the shootout that Mexico won. 2 penalties missed by Huerta were retaken. The third, which he put into the back of the net, should also have been retaken, because the goalkeeper had gone into the area to claim that another, the other goalkeeper had been sent off for a double yellow card. So there's an argument. It was all kinds of chaos. That is what this referee is known for. Now, knowing all of that, and Greg Berhalter and his staff knew all of this and they conveyed it to the players, can't have that happen in a game of this magnitude. I'll go back to the topic about how you manage these kinds of moments, mentality in these kinds of moments. Get bumped off the ball. What is the Panama player looking for in that moment? Looking for a reaction out of Tim Weah. He got it. And it changed the game. And I'm actually really glad that Greg Berhalter said that it affected the result. It did. There's no way around that. If the U.S. plays this match 11-11, I think it looks really different. There's two other things in this that I want to get into before we go to break here. One is the foul on Matt Turner that ultimately ends up in him being substituted and now questionable if he's going to be able to go against Uruguay on Monday. I did not like the lack of a reaction from the U.S. players. I needed to see a reaction. If somebody hits my goalkeeper, I'm going to make a point of it to any referee, especially this one, that something has to be done. You got to be careful. You don't want to get unnecessary cards, all these things. But if that's on the table and there was no U.S. player getting in the face of Blackman who ran into him, completely deliberately. I mean, there's no play on the ball. There's no chance of getting to that ball. It puts Matt Turner's health at risk and ultimately puts him out of the game. I need a U.S. player to be standing over Blackman, who stayed on the ground and did everything that you're supposed to do in that moment to try to avoid getting into trouble. There needed to be a crowd of U.S. players. One crowd going to the referee to talk to the referee about why isn't he being sent off. And two, the other needs to be standing all around that player. And just like a player bumped Tim Weah trying to get a reaction, the U.S. players needed to manage that moment better. I did not like the signals that they sent. And it's not long after that that Tim Weah, maybe looking for a little bit of revenge, makes a big mistake and ends up affecting his team's ability to win this game. The other thing, and look, it's a little bit of a footnote in a game like this one, because like I said, the referee did not cost the U.S. the game. He managed the game in a very strange way. 4 minutes of stoppage time in the second half is the strangest of strange ways to manage this game. There were more than 4 minutes in the VAR moments in the second half, including a penalty that was given and overturned with VAR's intervention. It should have been more than 4 minutes. I literally said in the press box, I think in the 89th minute, there's going to be a lot of stoppage time in this one. The U.S. has got an opportunity to go at this 10-10 after Carrasquillo was sent off. 4 minutes of stoppage time was an absolute joke. The game was not managed well by this referee, but he did not cost the U.S. the result. Tim Weah's red card and the lack of mentality in key moments is what cost the U.S. the result. So what's it going to take to get a result against Uruguay on Monday night? We'll try to come up with a game plan for the U.S. men's national team right after this on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Covering the world of soccer live.
It's Puyol!
With Jason Longshore.
And it's the man from the back.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's a special edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore, live from Reverb by Hard Rock, across the street from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. A great pregame spot, a great postgame spot for any big event at the Benz. Tonight, it is a great postgame spot for fans of the Panama national team as they are celebrating a historic 2-1 win over the U.S. men's national team this evening in the Copa America. Before we get into Monday night and what I've said is the biggest game in, oh man, I mean, we're probably, in terms of talking about the future direction of the program, we are, and the feeling going into it, we are honestly going back to 1989 in Port of Spain, Trinidad. and the U.S. trying to qualify for their first World Cup in 40 years. It has that kind of a feel because of the potential ramifications afterwards. 2 years from hosting the 2026 World Cup, U.S. soccer might be on a very different trajectory. Before we get into how they try to find their way back to the trajectory they were on walking into the door tonight, I do want to give a couple big shout-outs to this fan base in this city and tonight, the fan base in the building at the Benz. I was so happy to hear how it sounded in that building. And this is nothing about like not hearing the opposition fans. We heard the Panama fans from time to time. They were not in large numbers, but they did show out, and they're showing out here at Reverb by Hard Rock tonight, celebrating this win. But it wasn't just that there were a lot of U.S. fans there, but it was the way that they were a factor and the way that they participated in the match. They were loud. Multiple times on my notes, I was noting when they got loud and were cheering and trying to support this group after the red card, after the equalizer from Panama in the first half. Huge chance in the 31st minute. Big chance later in the half. Big chance at stoppage time. Big chance in the 55th, the 58th, the 67th. Huge support throughout the match. It felt like a proper crowd in terms of being supporters. And it was very, very cool to see and hear in my hometown. And it means a lot to me to hear that kind of noise and that kind of support. It felt like it should feel. This loss should hurt. If you're a U.S. supporter, it shouldn't be the kind of situation where you run to social media and have the spiciest take that you can possibly muster and try to drive up toxic vibes. That's not what being a supporter is. This hurts. You know, look, this program should not be in this spot right now. And the red card's a big factor in it. Tim Weah made an awful mistake that could change the future of this program. There's just no way around it. He didn't mean to. He didn't want to. He didn't walk in the door like, oh, I'm going to wreck everything tonight. No. And he's going to have to live with that. And Jess made the comparison in the first hour of the show. Jessica Charman joined me. And she compared it to David Beckham in the 1998 World Cup, where he got a silly red card. I think a little less silly and a little less obvious to be fair to Bex in that situation. But he was villainized by the soccer community in England for that red card. Tim Weah is not going to be here, thankfully. I think that's just because it happens in England that, I mean, people were literally hanging effigies of David Beckham that summer, and the responses that he got around the Premier League playing for Manchester United that next season were awful and disgusting. I'm glad we don't have those aspects of it. But the level of the mistake and the level of, I think, the internal blame and just bad feeling that Tim Weah is going to have is real. It's real. And the effects that it has, I think, on this fan base, it's real. No, it doesn't. It doesn't give you the ability to go start a contest for the biggest insult you can make to Greg Berhalter on Twitter, on the X app. That doesn't accomplish anything. This team has to go in and play on Monday against Uruguay, who is currently, as we speak, playing Bolivia. And currently, as we speak, leading 2-0 in the 68th minute. Where this group stands right now, it's Group C in the Copa America. The U.S. is right now in second place with 3 points. Panama is also on 3 points. Uruguay in the live table is on 6 points with 2 wins. Bolivia has not scored. They have conceded 4 goals. So if the scoreline holds in the Uruguay-Bolivia game, this is what happens when you go into Monday and you start thinking about what the U.S. has to do. Uruguay will be on 6 points, and they will have a +4 goal differential. The U.S. is on 3 points. They have a +1 goal differential. Panama is -1, also on 3 points, but they play Bolivia. you would expect that Panama wins. Let's say they win 3-0. Because they're going to go into it knowing they're going to need to score goals if the U.S. beats Uruguay to advance. So let's say they win 3-0. Okay? That takes their goal differential to +2. The U.S. would then, and it would also give them 6 goals, because when you start going through the tiebreakers, you might get down to how many goals you score. The U.S. would need to not just beat Uruguay if Panama takes the goal differential to a +2. They would need to beat them by 2 goals to do it. That's where you're starting to get into how difficult this task is on Monday because of where things stand. Now, let's play that out. Say the U.S. wins. Let's say they win 2-1. Okay, we're picking out scores just to give you an idea of what this looks like. That would mean they'd be 5 goals for, 3 goals against, they'd be a +2. Uruguay would be 6 goals for, 3 goals against, they would be a +3. And if Panama won their game by 3, they would be 7 goals for, 4 goals against, +3. That's how challenging this can get. You can end up with 3 teams, not just on 6 points, but 3 teams on the same goal differential. And then you start to get into how many goals they've scored. And things get really complicated. And there's going to be a lot of scoreboard watching. Now, to get to that point, to get to the point that we're talking about scoreboard watching and we're talking about goal margins of victory and goal differentials, and we're getting into all of that. To get to that point, you have to beat Uruguay, who is one of the contenders to win this tournament. Friend of the show, Nino Torres from Goal TV in Peru, in our conversation to preview the tournament, he picked Uruguay to go on and win it. I picked them to go to the final, and I had them losing to Argentina in the final. This is a top team, and the U.S. has to win, and there's a very good chance that they're going to have to win by multiple goals. That is now the task at hand. So how do you do it? As we try to make sense of where U.S. soccer is right now after a 2-1 loss to Panama on a special edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. I'm Jason Longshore. I do not have a game plan to beat Marcelo Bielsa. There's not a lot of managers in the world who do. It is not easy to do, and especially with this very talented team. Now, you might know Marcelo Bielsa from his time at Leeds. You might go way back and know him from other clubs, Newell's Old Boys. You might know that Atlanta United's first manager, Tata Martino, was heavily inspired by Marcelo Bielsa. Bielsa takes things a little bit differently than Tata does, than other, you know, disciples of his game. And it's a little different with a national team as well. Bielsa had incredible success with the Chilean national team. He had good success with the Argentine national team, but even more with Chile. He's trying to take it a step further with Uruguay. This team, so you go back to that game against Panama, man-marking a lot of times, counter-pressing with a very high line. So they lose the ball in the attacking half. They're going to want to try to win it back as quickly as possible. They want to build up in a 3-4-3. But then that 3-4-3 can turn into a 3-2-5 very quickly, and they're going to try to turn you over. But here's the thing about what I just said in terms of Uruguay and the way that they play that the U.S. has to look at. High fullbacks, high line. They're going to allow space behind them. The U.S. has to find it. They have to play over the top. Because as much as I said about the U.S. going into this game potentially needing to win by multiple goals, you don't do that in the first 15 minutes. You don't do that in the first 30. You don't do that in the first half. This is a 90-minute match. You can't lose the game early. You have to set yourself up to win by the margin you need to over the 90 minutes. A halftime score doesn't help you. It's the full-time score. So, how do you get there? You got to be secure defensively, number one. This is an extremely talented team. You look at the lineup that they have on the field right now against Bolivia, where they are leading 2-0. It's in the 74th minute. Darwin Nunez. This is his team now. This used to be Luis Suarez's team. This is Darwin Nunez's team. He's got a goal tonight. Nicolas De La Cruz from River Plate in the midfield. An incredibly talented player. Maximiliano Araujo, the winger that you might remember from the AmFam Cup when he played for Toluca in that match against Atlanta United. He's got a goal in this tournament. Facundo Pellistri from Manchester United. Federico Valverde from Real Madrid. Manuel Ugarte, another player who is on the rise, starting to be a player that people think can be a star when you get out of this tournament. Even bigger star than Valverde, a bigger star than Pellistri, a bigger star than De La Cruz. That's the front six, y'all. The back line, Ronald Araujo. This is a very good team. But if you look for a weakness, if you're looking for a weakness, that front six, no weakness. Not a weakness at all. And they got plenty of talent beyond that on the bench. If you start to make rotations, you have Luis Suarez coming off the bench. You have Betancourt available as well. You've got talent. If you're looking for weaknesses in this team, it can be that back line. They're going to leave space. How can the U.S. exploit that space? A couple different ways that I think you're going to have to look at as you create a game plan to try to get something out of this game. You're going to have to turn them over when they are committing numbers forward, and especially the fullbacks. And you're going to have to make runs into the wide positions. Well, that's a lot more difficult when you don't have Tim Weah, because this would have been a perfect game for him. He's suspended. He got a red card tonight that might have cost you your tournament. Okay, that's not really Christian Pulisic's game. That's not really Gio Reyna's game. It can be Folarin Balogun's game, but you want him centrally making those runs in behind. You've got to think about what you can do to get wingers running in behind on a regular basis. If Uruguay is going to commit their fullbacks high, if that 3-4-3 in buildup is going to turn into a 3-2-5 at times, you got to take advantage of that and attack them in the wide spaces with balls over the top. You have to. That's where the game can be won. That's where you can open them up. That's where you can challenge them. How are you going to do that? You're missing Tim Weah in this, which, honestly, if you're looking for the prototypical player to get you into those spots, to make those runs, to be dangerous, it's Tim Weah. It is. And you don't have him for this match after this red card. So how can you find a way to manufacture this if you're Greg Berhalter? You got to look at something different than we've seen from this team so far. You've got to look at, do you have to go to two up top? If you don't have those wide players who can get in behind, and honestly, you really don't in this group. You don't have those prototypical wingers to stretch the game. So how do you do it? I think you might be looking at three center backs. I think you might be looking at getting the wing backs high when you can. Anthony Robinson can get in behind. Really wish you had Sergiño Dest in this. You don't. I don't know if Joe Scally is that guy. I question Shaq Moore and what he can give you at this point, but he can get in behind. Maybe this is a game for him, but I think more than anything, it's a game for two up top, and it's a game to try to put that pressure with direct play over the top on Uruguay. You're going to have to find ways to counter this very strong team. It will not be easy for Greg Berhalter, and he doesn't have long to figure it out. He's got a handful of days before this team plays the biggest game of their national team lives on Monday night, as the U.S. at 9 o'clock will play Uruguay, same time as Panama and Bolivia. And we'll know by 11 when we go on for Atlanta Soccer Tonight, another special edition on Monday night. We will know at least how the group is finished. We might not know what the next steps are for U.S. soccer, but we will know at that point how the group has finished and what could be on the table in terms of reactions to it. We got one more segment here on this special edition of AST. Come back with me in about 5 minutes on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
When when it comes to the world of soccer, we've got you covered.
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. Final segment of Atlanta Soccer Tonight, a special edition. After one of the biggest soccer matches that the city has ever had, yeah, I know Argentina-Canada was a huge deal last Thursday, but in terms of potential impact, this one tonight, a loss for the U.S. men's national team, 2-1 to Panama. It is a potentially game-changing, and you can take game-changing on a lot of different definitions right now, a potentially game-changing night for the U.S. soccer men's national team program. I'm Jason Longshore. I am hanging out at Reverb by Hard Rock right across the street from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Great pregame, great postgame spot. The vibes are pretty good here in the lobby bar, and really the vibes are being delivered by the fans from Panama having a great time after a historic win for their national team. I said it in the last segment. I do want to just reiterate, this was a very special night. The result should not dampen it. It was a special night for soccer in Atlanta. It was a special night for everybody at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. A special night for the game in this city. And this is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, and it is very, very meaningful. It's a special night that you guys are spending your time with me as well. I don't think there's many radio stations in the country talking about this game in a two-hour format like we have tonight. The only reason I get to do that stuff is because you guys are out there listening. You're downloading the podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to Off the Woodwork wherever you get your podcast. We are very lucky, even on nights like this that are painful, that are infuriating in some ways, that are frustrating in many ways. Even on nights like this, we are so, so lucky to get to have these experiences, because a decade ago, you didn't have them. The U.S. men's national team, before the 2015 Gold Cup semifinal that was at the Georgia Dome, the U.S. men's national team hadn't been here since 1977. They played one other meaningful game in the city, a World Cup qualifier in 1968 at the old Atlanta Stadium, a win over Canada. Fans, and especially kids, haven't had these experiences. So even in a night of frustration, a night of anger, a night of, man, what are we doing at this point? What can we do? What can be better? Even on a night like this, you can't lose sight of that stuff. Another thing you can't lose sight of is U.S. Soccer had to issue a statement a few minutes ago, and I will read it to you. The U.S. Soccer Federation, U.S. Soccer is aware of and deeply disturbed by the racist comments made online and directed at several of our men's national team players following tonight's match. There's absolutely no place in the game for such hateful and discriminatory behavior. These actions are not only unacceptable, but also contrary to the values of respect and inclusivity that we uphold as an organization. U.S. Soccer stands firmly against racism in all forms and will continue to support our players. It's reprehensible that this kind of stuff would pop up, and I hate to say it, but I was worried that it would after a night like this, after a big mistake on the field. Anyone with half of a brain would know that Tim Weah did not go into the night looking to ruin it. He made a mistake. He lost his head, as Greg Berhalter said. He made a catastrophic mistake for this match and for the team and for this tournament. He issued a statement on social media as well. He said, "Today, I let my team and my country down. A moment of frustration led to an irreversible consequence, and for that, I'm deeply sorry to my teammates, coaches, family, and our fans. Moving forward, I'm committed to learning from this experience, not allowing an opponent to provoke me, and working to regain the trust and respect of my team and supporters." He said, no matter what, I will always fight for my team and my country till the day I'm no longer needed or capable to. I sincerely apologize to everyone. My love for this team goes beyond just football, and I'm so sad and angry at myself for putting my brothers through what they went through tonight. That's Tim Weah. What U.S. Soccer had to issue and having to even do that at this point, when there are many, many other things that U.S. Soccer will be thinking about and working towards, it's ridiculous. And it is an element of social media. It's an element of where we are right now that is extremely frustrating. I do not believe it represents the majority. I don't believe that it represents the majority of this fan base. I don't believe that it represents the majority of soccer fans worldwide, but it does rear its ugly head way too often and more often than not with the advent of social media. And it sickens me. There's just no other way around it. I mentioned how lucky we are in this town to have nights like this, even when they don't go well from a result standpoint. The thing about this game, and I always end, and it's going to be a little bit difficult on a night like tonight, but I always end Atlanta Soccer Tonight with three things that make me smile about the game. Not a lot of smiles at the moment, and especially when reading that those kinds of statements have to be issued and those kinds of things are being directed at players who wear this national team shirt that represent this country. The thing about this sport to me, and something that always makes me smile when I think about it, is it has just, it's changed my life. I've told you guys these stories before, but it's maybe exposed me to the wider world. You know, I didn't grow up in a family that had the means to travel around the world. I didn't have any opportunity to travel internationally until honestly not that long ago. It wasn't something that we had the resources for, just flat out. This sport, whether it was playing it as a kid and having Latino teammates, and you know, I didn't grow up around a large Latino population, but I had Latino teammates on my teams when I was really little. I had teammates with families who came from other countries, and I didn't get exposed to that in other ways outside of the sport. The sport made me and makes me every day understand, I think, people better. I think different people from different walks of life better, different parts of the world. I think it's made me more tolerant of those differences. I mean, you know, this is a very different portion of it, but press box behavior. Look, it's very different. In other countries, people in the media have different responsibilities than we do here in the United States. They handle themselves differently. They're expected to handle themselves differently. I think in when we have some of these big games, you know, you get people looking crazy at reporters from other countries when they act in the press box differently. They might cheer. They might react loudly to things. That's how this game is felt in different countries, and etiquette is different in different countries. And rather than thinking my way is better than anybody else's, it's that understanding of, hey, I wouldn't act that way because in where I'm from and what I've learned, I do this. But that's how they respond to these moments. That's how they act differently in these moments. Okay, it's different. Might not be for me. Might not be what I agree with. But it doesn't mean somebody's bad person. Doesn't mean somebody's wrong. You deal with it. You learn. You accept it. You move on. And that's what this game has taught me. So when I see things like players being racially abused online because of a soccer match and the lowest common denominator coming out in these moments, it honestly makes me sick. And for any player who is having to deal with that, I hate it for them, and I hate that they're having to deal with it. On top of, look, a really difficult result. You take that part out of it, and we're just talking about the result. It hurts. It's painful. These players know what's on the line. These players who backed Greg Berhalter, wanted him to be the leader of this national team, told U.S. Soccer that, told everybody who would listen that, they want him as their head coach. Well, if the U.S. men's national team does not win on Monday, he might not be the head coach on Tuesday. I don't know if things happen that fast. I have no idea. But sadly, I think it has to be considered because this tournament has been the measuring stick for where this team is. And if you don't get out of the group, and this is what I said walking into the tournament, and yeah, there's different reasons for it. If you just didn't play well, it's easy to get to where you might have to get to on Tuesday. If you don't play well, that's fine. If you lose every game, easy decision. in a tournament like this, and especially after a night like this, where it is a big mistake by an individual player that you would not expect to make that mistake. And he did. And it changed the night. And it changed the result. Potentially. We're never going to know that for sure. Affected the U.S. ability to win this game. Affected their ability to even get a draw out of this game, which would have put you in a dramatically different spot on Monday. Said it earlier. You have to learn mentality-wise. You have to learn. Fans have to learn this too. Players have to learn this. Teams in the U.S. have to learn this. There are times in games where you're not going to find another goal. You're not going to go out and win the match that's in front of you. You can't lose it. That is something in this sport that maybe it's unique to soccer. Maybe it's unique, again, learning from other cultures. Maybe it's just learning in how they process things. If Panama had gotten out of here 1-1, even with the man advantage, they wouldn't have been hurting too bad because they would have known, okay, hey, we're alive. We're going into the last day. That's all right. We got a chance. The U.S. had to. In the second half, when the game was going against them, and it was pretty clear that it was not feasible for them to get numbers forward, the U.S. men's national team had to survive at that point with a 1-1. They had to do whatever it took to get to a 1-1. They didn't. And now, because of that, and I do not put that on the coaching staff. I know that's the easy thing to do. I know that's the cool thing to do. I know that would probably score me points on social media platforms worldwide. It's not how I give you guys my opinion. In this case, Greg Berhalter and his staff made the right decisions for what they could control. They could not control Tim Weah's reaction to being provoked. They could not control other referee decisions. They tried to control the game as best as they could with the disadvantages that they had been dealt. And I think they made the right decisions in doing that. And I don't think the players executed well enough to get the U.S. to where they needed to, which was with a point out of this and a better chance of survival on Monday. Now, you've got to find a way, as the game has gone final for Uruguay and Bolivia. Your final score there, it got out of hand. 5-0 just a little bit ago. We were talking about it being 2-0 and what that meant. Well, now it's 5-0 finish. So Uruguay on top of Group C, 6 points plus 7 goal differential. So they're pretty free and clear no matter what happens. The U.S. currently is in second place. They will play the number one team, Uruguay, on Monday night at 9 o'clock, plus 1 goal differential for the U.S. Panama also won 3 points after tonight's win. Minus 1 goal differential. Bolivia is who Panama will play. They are minus 7 goal differential. I don't know what Bolivia is going to have to challenge Panama on Monday. You have to go into that game expecting Panama to win. By how much? I don't know. And that's what will ultimately, if the United States can pull off an upset, that would be among the biggest in program history. If they can pull off an upset to beat Uruguay of Darwin Nunez, of Federico Valverde, of Marcelo Bielsa, if they can pull off that upset, even still, you've got to watch the scoreboard with Panama and Bolivia.
When it comes to the world of soccer, we've got you covered.
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. Final segment of Atlanta Soccer Tonight, a special edition after one of the biggest soccer matches that the city has ever had. Yeah, I know Argentina-Canada was a huge deal last Thursday, but in terms of potential impact, this one tonight, a loss for the U.S. men's national team, 2-1 to Panama. It is a potentially game-changing, and you can take game-changing on a lot of different definitions right now, a potentially game-changing night for the U.S. soccer men's national team program. I'm Jason Longshore. I am hanging out at Reverb by Hard Rock right across the street from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Great pregame, great postgame spot. The vibes are pretty good here in the lobby bar, and really the vibes are being delivered by the fans from Panama having a great time after a historic win for their national team. I said it in the last segment. I do want to just reiterate, this was a very special night. The result should not dampen it. It was a special night for soccer in Atlanta. It was a special night for everybody at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. A special night for the game in this city. And this is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, and it is very, very meaningful. It's a special night that you guys are spending your time with me as well. I don't think there's many radio stations in the country talking about this game in a two-hour format like we have tonight. The only reason I get to do that stuff is because you guys are out there listening. You're downloading the podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to Off the Woodwork wherever you get your podcast. We are very lucky, even on nights like this that are painful, that are infuriating in some ways, that are frustrating in many ways. Even on nights like this, we are so, so lucky to get to have these experiences, because a decade ago, you didn't have them. The U.S. men's national team, before the 2015 Gold Cup semifinal that was at the Georgia Dome, the U.S. men's national team hadn't been here since 1977. They played one other meaningful game in the city, a World Cup qualifier in 1968 at the old Atlanta Stadium, a win over Canada. Fans, and especially kids, haven't had these experiences. So even in a night of frustration, a night of anger, a night of, man, what are we doing at this point? What can we do? What can be better? Even on a night like this, you can't lose sight of that stuff. Another thing you can't lose sight of is U.S. Soccer had to issue a statement a few minutes ago, and I will read it to you. The U.S. Soccer Federation, U.S. Soccer is aware of and deeply disturbed by the racist comments made online and directed at several of our men's national team players following tonight's match. There's absolutely no place in the game for such hateful and discriminatory behavior. These actions are not only unacceptable, but also contrary to the values of respect and inclusivity that we uphold as an organization. U.S. Soccer stands firmly against racism in all forms and will continue to support our players. It's reprehensible that this kind of stuff would pop up, and I hate to say it, but I was worried that it would after a night like this, after a big mistake on the field. Anyone with half of a brain would know that Tim Weah did not go into the night looking to ruin it. He made a mistake. He lost his head, as Greg Berhalter said. He made a catastrophic mistake for this match and for the team and for this tournament. He issued a statement on social media as well. He said, "Today, I let my team and my country down. A moment of frustration led to an irreversible consequence, and for that, I'm deeply sorry to my teammates, coaches, family, and our fans. Moving forward, I'm committed to learning from this experience, not allowing an opponent to provoke me, and working to regain the trust and respect of my team and supporters." He said, no matter what, I will always fight for my team and my country till the day I'm no longer needed or capable to. I sincerely apologize to everyone. My love for this team goes beyond just football, and I'm so sad and angry at myself for putting my brothers through what they went through tonight." That's Tim Weah. What U.S. Soccer had to issue and having to even do that at this point, when there are many, many other things that U.S. Soccer will be thinking about and working towards, it's ridiculous. And it is an element of social media. It's an element of where we are right now that is extremely frustrating. I do not believe it represents the majority. I don't believe that it represents the majority of this fan base. I don't believe that it represents the majority of soccer fans worldwide, but it does rear its ugly head way too often, and more often than not with the advent of social media. And it sickens me. There's just no other way around it. I mentioned how lucky we are in this town to have nights like this, even when they don't go well from a result standpoint. The thing about this game, and I always end, and it's going to be a little bit difficult on a night like tonight, but I always end Atlanta Soccer Tonight with three things that make me smile about the game. Not a lot of smiles at the moment. And especially when reading that those kinds of statements have to be issued and those kinds of things are being directed at players who wear this national team shirt that represent this country. The thing about this sport to me, and something that always makes me smile when I think about it, is it's changed my life. I've told you guys these stories before, but it's maybe exposed me to the wider world. You know, I didn't grow up in a family that had the means to travel around the world. I didn't have any opportunity to travel internationally until, honestly, not that long ago. It wasn't something that we had the resources for, just flat out. This sport, whether it was playing it as a kid and having Latino teammates, and, you know, I didn't grow up around a large Latino population, but I had Latino teammates on my teams when I was really little. I had teammates with families who came from other countries, and I didn't get exposed to that in other ways outside of the sport. The sport made me and makes me every day understand, I think, people better. I think different people from different walks of life better, different parts of the world. I think it's made me more tolerant of those differences. I mean, you know, this is a very different portion of it, but press box behavior. Look, it's very different. In other countries, people in the media have different responsibilities than we do here in the United States. They handle themselves differently. They're expected to handle themselves differently. I think in when we have some of these big games, you know, you get people looking crazy at reporters from other countries when they act in the press box differently. They might cheer. They might react loudly to things. That's how this game is felt in different countries, and etiquette is different in different countries. And rather than thinking my way is better than anybody else's, it's that understanding of, hey, I wouldn't act that way because in where I'm from and what I've learned, I do this, but that's how they respond to these moments. That's how they act differently in these moments. Okay, it's different. Might not be for me, might not be what I agree with, but it doesn't mean somebody's bad person. Doesn't mean somebody's wrong. You deal with it. You learn. You accept it. You move on. And that's what this game has taught me. So when I see things like players being racially abused online because of a soccer match and the lowest common denominator coming out in these moments, it honestly makes me sick. And for any player who is having to deal with that, I hate it for them, and I hate that they're having to deal with it. On top of, look, a really difficult result. You take that part out of it, and we're just talking about the result. It hurts. It's painful. These players know what's on the line. These players who backed Greg Berhalter, wanted him to be the leader of this national team, told U.S. Soccer that, told everybody who would listen that, they want him as their head coach. Well, if the U.S. men's national team does not win on Monday, he might not be the head coach on Tuesday. I don't know if things happen that fast. I have no idea. But sadly, I think it has to be considered, because this tournament has been the measuring stick for where this team is. And if you don't get out of the group, and this is what I said walking into the tournament, and yeah, there's different reasons for it. If you just didn't play well, it's easy to get to where you might have to get to on Tuesday. If you don't play well, that's fine. If you lose every game, easy decision. In a tournament like this, and especially after a night like this, where it is a big mistake by an individual player that you would not expect to make that mistake, and he did, and it changed the night, and it changed the result, potentially. We're never going to know that for sure. Affected the U.S. ability to win this game, affected their ability to even get a draw out of this game, which would have put you in a dramatically different spot on Monday. Said it earlier. You have to learn mentality-wise. You have to learn. Fans have to learn this too. Players have to learn this. Teams in the U.S. have to learn this. There are times in games where you're not going to find another goal. You're not going to go out and win the match that's in front of you. You can't lose it. That is something in this sport that maybe it's unique to soccer. Maybe it's unique, again, learning from other cultures. Maybe it's just learning in how they process things. If Panama had gotten out of here 1-1, even with the man advantage, they wouldn't have been hurting too bad because they would have known, okay, hey, we're alive. We're going to go into the last day. That's all right. We got a chance. The U.S. had to in the second half when the game was going against them, and it was pretty clear that it was not feasible for them to get numbers forward. The U.S. men's national team had to survive at that point with a 1-1. They had to do whatever it took to get to a 1-1. They didn't. And now, because of that, and I do not put that on the coaching staff. I know that's the easy thing to do. I know that's the cool thing to do. I know that would probably score me points on social media platforms worldwide. It's not how I give you guys my opinion. In this case, Greg Berhalter and his staff made the right decisions for what they could control. They could not control Tim Weah's reaction to being provoked. They could not control other referee decisions. They tried to control the game as best as they could with the disadvantages that they had been dealt. And I think they made the right decisions in doing that. And I don't think the players executed well enough to get the U.S. to where they needed to, which was with a point out of this and a better chance of survival on Monday. Now, you've got to find a way, as the game has gone final for Uruguay and Bolivia. Your final score there, it got out of hand. 5-0 just a little bit ago. We were talking about it being 2-0 and what that meant. Well, now it's 5-0 finish. So Uruguay on top of Group C, 6 points plus 7 goal differential. So they're pretty free and clear no matter what happens. The U.S. currently is in second place. They will play the number one team, Uruguay, on Monday night at 9 o'clock, plus 1 goal differential for the U.S. Panama also won 3 points after tonight's win, minus 1 goal differential. Bolivia is who Panama will play. They are minus 7 goal differential. I don't know what Bolivia is going to have to challenge Panama on Monday. You have to go into that game expecting Panama to win. By how much? I don't know. And that's what will ultimately, if the United States can pull off an upset, that would be among the biggest in program history. If they can pull off an upset to beat Uruguay of Darwin Nunez, of Federico Valverde, of Marcelo Bielsa, if they can pull off that upset, even still, you've got to watch the scoreboard with Panama and Bolivia. It is going to be an epic evening on Monday night. The games both start at 9 o'clock. The second halves both should start at the same time as well. I will have an Atlanta Soccer Tonight special for you when those games are final. Should be at 11 o'clock. We will talk through everything. We will try to figure out where the program goes from here. But Monday is the biggest night for the U.S. Men's National Team program. Maybe ever. Definitely since they qualified for the World Cup in 1989. It is that big of a deal. Before we even get to that, you have a little bit of time to catch your breath for Saturday night. Hopefully a lot of you will be in the bend supporting Atlanta United. They are hosting Toronto FC, 6:30 for the Five Stripes Countdown, 7:40 for the kickoff. You can listen to all of it here on 92.9 The Game. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. Thanks to everybody who got me audio tonight, Madison Cruz and John Nelson. But most of all, thank you guys for spending your time with me. Adios, everybody.